Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello and welcome to the final episode of Season 1 of Let Me Tell You from the Irish Examiner with me, Danny McConnell. In this podcast series, we've been taking a look at some of the most dramatic moments in recent Irish political history from the unique perspective of one of the key players. This week, we look at the circumstances of how Ireland came within an inch of having a Christmastime election in 2017 and how it took the resignation of then-Taoiseach Francis Fitzgerald to avoid it. Fianna Fáil, then in opposition, were supporting the government through the controversial confidence and supply arrangement, but it was that party's decision to vote no confidence in Fitzgerald which brought the country to the precipice of a snap general election. With me in studio to discuss those highly dramatic moments, and more importantly, his central role in that affair, is Jim O'Callaghan, the party's then justice spokesperson, and now, of course, TD for Dublin Bay South. Jim, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Danny.
Jim, the spectre of Maurice McCabe had obviously haunted Fine Gael in government since 2012 or 2013, and he's central to this story as well. And obviously, the treatment of Maurice McCabe had culminated in the demise of Alan Shatter and Martin Callanan. But from your perspective, you might tell me and our listeners, just how did Francis Fitzgerald, who was no longer Minister for Justice, come to be sort of under the pressure in late 2017 in relation to Maurice McCabe?
Well, you're correct in stating about to understand the resignation of Francis Fitzgerald. You've really got to understand the story of Maurice McCabe because they're inextricably linked. And there's no way you'd understand why Frances was forced to resign if you simply looked at the events in the, say, week prior to her resignation, which was on the 28th of November 2017. I suppose the way I'd look at it, the start of this, and of course, I only become a TD in 2016. You've got to remember that as well. But the start of, I suppose, this aspect of the Maurice McCabe story was in February 2014. Micheál Martin stood up on the Dáil. He had a dossier that had been given to him by Sergeant McCabe. He gave it to Enda Kenny. I think Enda Kenny had previously met Sergeant McCabe. And a decision was made by the then Fine Gael Labour government that they were going to investigate this. And they got Sean Geeran, senior counsel, to look at it, okay? And Geeran looked at the report. He reported back very quickly in May 2014. And his report sort of stated that McCabe's complaints hadn't been properly investigated. And he sort of said as well that there needs to be a commission of investigation in order to assess what this decent sergeant appears to be stating. Now, as you said, there were political consequences to that, because as a result of the publication of the Geeran report, which came out in May 2014, Alan Shatter was forced to resign. And in fairness, Alan Shatter, like he subsequently, the Court of Appeal subsequently upheld his complaints about the Geeran report. But the political consequence of Geeran was that Alan Shatter was forced to resign. And the effect of it was that, I suppose, the then Fine Gael Labour government were able to say, listen, we have a new broom in here. We put Francis Fitzgerald into justice. I think later that year, in November 2014, Martin Callanan was gone, Noreen O'Sullivan was put in. And that's the background to look at it, that this was a new approach from Fine Gael. We were now going to take Maurice McCabe's complaints seriously from May 2014 onwards.
And it was a series of questions in the weeks preceding to kind of November, primarily from Alan Kelly, which had sort of gone unanswered from Charlie Flanagan, which brought the Maurice McCabe issue back centre stage. And we have a clip here from the Dáil where your own party leader, Micheál Martin, raised it. Let's take a listen.
Taoiseach, the Commission of Investigation led by Justice O'Higgins was essentially established to determine the veracity of very serious allegations made of Garda malpractice by Sergeant McCabe. When it subsequently emerged after the conclusion of the Higgins Commission of Investigation that the legal representative of the former Garda Commissioner was instructed to attack the motivation and integrity of Sergeant McCabe, there was genuine shock. We've now learned in various reports over the last number of days that the head of Garda HR apparently was told that, quote, we're going to go after Maurice at the Commission. To be fair, Deputy Alan Kelly has tabled quite a number of parliamentary questions in relation to this issue. Questions which, in the normal sense, should have got fairly straightforward answers. Minister Flanagan's answer is quite classical in the sense that he answered a question that he wasn't asked.
To answer your question, I spoke to the Thánaiste yesterday, who is currently in the United Arab Emirates on a trade mission. She confirmed to me that she had no hand, act or part in forming the former commissioner's legal strategy, nor did she have any prior knowledge of the legal strategy that the former commissioner's team pursued.
No hand, act or part. Why was that explanation not satisfactory?
To understand it, I've got to bring it back to the chronology as well. That there are recordings, I'd say, from November 2017. Yeah. So after Guérin, then in February 2015, the then government sets up a commission of investigation by Kevin O'Higgins. It reports in May 2016. At that stage, I've just been appointed Fianna Fáil justice spokesperson. So it was my antennae for the first time, really, are then focusing on the issue of Maurice McCabe from May 2016 onwards. That's when I get involved in frontline politics. But the important thing about it was that the report of Kevin O'Higgins upheld what Maurice McCabe was saying. It says this is a decent guard. What you're saying is correct. They weren't properly investigated. But it's what happened during that commission of investigation, the private hearings that took place, was what ultimately was very damaging for Francis. But that information didn't come out until much later, until November 2017. And I suppose just to continue with the chronology for your listeners, like it was in then October 2016 that further protected disclosures were made. And the protected disclosures that were made to Francis Fitzgerald was to the effect that the commissioner and the former commissioner tried to discredit Maurice McCabe at the O'Higgins Commission of Investigation. And that was a big issue at the time. And Francis Fitzgerald said, OK, listen, I'm going to get another judge to look at this, Éireann O'Neill. He comes back then in February 2017 and he says, listen, we need to have a commission of investigation into this. But something happens in February 2017 that is quite significant, and I know you're probably going to deal with it. But in February 2017, for the first time, there are reports in the public domain about allegations being made that Sergeant McCabe had been involved in serious criminal sexual activity.
All completely false.
All completely false. But that was the first time that came into the public domain in February 2017. And it was like a thunderbolt to the public. And also for me, because I hadn't heard this before at the time, having only been there since, whatever, February 2016. But it was a very toxic issue for the political establishment, particularly for those, I'm sure there were many who were aware of this, as far back as sort of 2014 and earlier, you know.
And it ultimately led to the establishment of the Disclosures Tribunal, which obviously examined all this stuff and subsequently vindicated Maurice McCabe.
Yeah.
But this period, November of 2017, is when it really kind of came to a head politically.
Yeah.
And what we heard was, you know, this kind of claim, repeated claim from Alan Kelly in the Labour Party that, you know, serious questions around this allegation towards Maurice McCabe and when and where the department knew and Francis Fitzgerald knew about the said allegations was sort of came to dominate.
Yeah.
But rather than fess up or open up, what we got from Fine Gael and Charlie Flanagan was a sort of a doubling down and saying, how dare you question me? And we have a small clip here of him trying to put Alan Kelly essentially back in his box.
I will ask you, Kian Corlett, for protection in this house. I will not have my good name and my professional reputation traduced by Deputy Alan Kelly, both inside this house and outside. If there are matters for the tribunal, and I make this with regard to a point of order, if there are matters germane to the tribunal, that's the place for it. But I will ask Deputy Kelly now to desist from engaging in a smear campaign against me personally and professionally.
Well, Deputy Kelly hasn't said anything here in my hearing. Deputy Howland, please. We'll try and protect everyone.
Now, Charlie Flanagan was ultimately went back into the door and had to apologise to Alan Kelly for that charge. But it did portray an attitude of the establishment at the time to try and dampen down talk around this sort of particular narrative around Maurice McCabe being targeted. As justice spokesperson for the main opposition party, which was essentially supporting government through confidence and supply, where was your head at that particular moment? Like, what were you trying to get at, or where were you in terms of trying to get answers?
Well, listen, it was unusual. After, I suppose, the O'Higgins report had been produced in May 2016, there was then a lot of allegations being made in the Dáil by lots of politicians, not just about the Garda commissioner, but also about other Gardaí. And, like, I suppose, I'm coming from a legal background. These allegations are being made. People are saying they need to resign And I suppose looking at it as a lawyer, I'm thinking to myself, just because an allegation is made against somebody doesn't mean that they have to resign. They're entitled to defend themselves and say that's not correct. You know, there was a certain amount of, I would have thought, suspicion about that approach from me at that stage in the Dáil. But just listening to Charlie Flanagan there, it emphasises and reminds me again of two things. First of all, there were lots of allegations being made. Some of them were true, some of them weren't true. Secondly, there was hypersensitivity about this issue of Maurice McKay, because it had been shown that if you're a politician in government or a guard in power on the wrong side of the Maurice McCabe narrative, it could be lethal for you. Yeah. And so we just need to remember that there was, the tribunal was set up, I suppose, in February 2017. Mm. And the reason it became a tribunal was because of reports in your paper and a primetime programme which referred to the fact that Maurice McCabe had been referred to Tusta. Mm. And this elevated it from what was going to be a commission investigation into a tribunal of inquiry.
But it also was clear that McCabe made it clear and his family made it clear that they had no confidence essentially in another behind closed doors process. Yeah. They wanted it out in public, really.
And that was understandable. But what really triggered that, because the tribunal of inquiry is a big thing for the Oireachtas to approve, it went through so easily.
Yeah.
And the reason it went through was because of the outrage of the story about him being reported to Tusla.
Yeah.
And then the terms of reference were enlarged to include, was there any sort of allegations made against Maurice McCabe of a criminal nature that were designed to discredit him? So I suppose looking at it, Danny, from February 2017, as a politician, I'm thinking, well, this has gone off to the tribunal now.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, I was an opposition politician, but at least, I suppose, the steam had been taken out of it.
The political steam had been taken out of it.
Gone off the tribunal. Peter Charlton did his opening statement in the tribunal very quickly after it was established. People had confidence in it. This is going to work. But then you're right, I suppose, in November 2017, there's an RTE report that comes out. I think it's the 21st of November 2017. And it says that the Department of Justice and Francis Fitzgerald were aware in May 2015 of a strategy to discredit Maurice McCabe before the commission investigation led by Mr. Justice O'Higgins. That was, irrespective of the tribunal, that was just a big political story.
Mm.
And unfortunately for Francis, it put her in the centre of it and it put her on the wrong side of Maurice McCabe on that issue.
We have a clip of Francis Fitzgerald seeking to defend her status in the Dáil and under pressure from Mary Lou MacDonald of Sinn Féin.
There were no efforts to suppress it. There were no efforts made by me. I'm speaking for myself. There were no efforts. I don't believe there were by other people either. There was a process being followed. I was informed. Remember, I haven't been in the department for 5.5 months. There was a process being followed in the department in relation to the email.
Your refusal to provide plausible answers has placed you at the centre of this scandal. And you may think, Tánaiste, that you'll weather this storm, that you'll ride it out, but you won't. Because the terrible vista of a conspiracy to malign a good man, to smear him as a sex abuser in order to shut him up, is not some minor political episode
that can be simply brushed away.
It goes to the heart of your integrity. You failed as Minister for Justice. You failed in protecting the integrity of that office. You failed Maurice McCabe. And it is now abundantly clear, Tánaiste, that it is time for you to go.
Jim, what was very clear over that sort of period from when Micheál Martin first raised questions of this in the Dáil to this point where, you know, Sinn Féin are beginning to talk about a motion of no confidence, is that the then Taoiseach, Leo Varadkar, has gone into the Dáil on more than one occasion and has had to change his story or has been dealing with incomplete information. Was that for you the point at which confidence starts ebbing away from Francis Fitzgerald, or at what point do you think, you know, you guys start getting to the point where you might be supporting Sinn Féin's motion?
It was problematic. And I suppose from the point of view of Fianna Fáil and myself, once the tribunal is established in February 2017, we think it's gone away. There's a change then in May 2017. Leo comes in as Taoiseach. Francis Fitzgerald moves out of justice. For all intents and purposes, her time in justice had gone okay. She had not got into a conflict on the Maurice McCabe issue. She goes off and thinks the Department of Children. Charlie Flanagan comes in. And then this report comes out. And obviously, the Taoiseach has to respond to it in the Dáil. His answers, he got information from Francis, which turned out to be, it was not correct. It was gave different accounts as to when she was aware of circumstance. But ultimately, I suppose what it comes down to, just so as your listeners remember it, the document that was revealed by RTE on the 21st of November 2017 was an email. And it was an email, I think, from the 15th of May 2015.
That's correct.
From, I think it was counsel for the Attorney General, or somebody from the Attorney General's office was there, was contacting the Department of Justice, just letting you know that there's an aggressive approach being adopted to Maurice McCabe up at the O'Higgins Commission of Inquiry. And I suppose the political charge being made by us and others was that this is evidence that the Department of Justice and the Minister for Justice was aware of an attack on Sergeant McCabe at the Commission of Investigation, and that's contrary to what has been presented by her to date.
And absolutely, and it was in contrary to the very clear and repeated expressions from Leo Varadkar and others, including Francis Fitzgerald, that the government was very much listening to Maurice McCabe and supportive of Maurice McCabe. It seemed to be that the state was talking out of both sides of its mouth. Now, we know from the chronology as well that Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar had a meeting, I think the day after that RTE programme, in which I think you were on the record and said he made it clear to the then Taoiseach, you guys could no longer express confidence in Francis Fitzgerald. Was that a decision that you and Micheál Martin took together, or was that something he decided on his own?
This was a decision. I remember the day vividly. There were discussion with advisors, with Micheál. Like, you've got to look at the background to this as well, as well as the background having an impact in government. The background also had an impact on opposition, on Fianna Fáil. Like, one of the criticisms of Fianna Fáil in the year and a half, 2 years prior to this, was that Fianna Fáil, you know, they're criticising the government for not supporting Maurice McCabe, but they're really not prepared to do much about it, you know? Like, I wasn't calling for people to resign. I didn't initially call for Noreen O'Sullivan resign, didn't call for Francis. There was just too much calls for everyone to resign at that time. And I didn't think it was appropriate. But when this issue came out, like, it was politically untenable for Fianna Fáil to say, okay, well, listen, it's a serious issue, but we'll hear her explanation. It just was not politically credible or politically tenable for us to adopt that approach. And, you know, I was asked to go on the 6-1 news one day.
We have a clip of it here, so we might just take a quick listen to it now.
There's a clause in the confidence of supply agreement which says that if there's a difficulty that undermines the agreement, we will try to resolve it by the two leaders speaking together. Now, the events that have happened in the past week, and in particular the acknowledgement that the Taoiseach received this email on the 15th of May 2015, is an event that has undermined the agreement between Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. And as a result of that, Micheál Martin yesterday spoke to the Taoiseach. He told him that this was an event that was undermining the agreement. And he indicated to the Taoiseach that Fianna Fáil no longer had confidence in the Taoiseach. Well, the likelihood is that there will be a vote next week. Although Sinn Féin have said they're putting down a motion, we haven't seen it yet. Similarly, we may put down a motion, and we have until 11 o'clock in the morning to do so. However, I think it's virtually certain that next week there will be a vote as to whether or not Dáil Éireann has confidence in the Taoiseach. We do not have confidence in the Taoiseach, and we won't be voting confidence in her.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Jim, there are a number of questions around this. You were about to make the point, the significance of you going on 6-1. Can I ask, like, what part of this was driven by, say, frustrations in your own party around confidence and supply, essentially kind of having to defend the government line or vote with government at various times? Or was this more about the substantive issue around Francis Fitzgerald and confidence in her handling of this issue?
Unquestionably, confidence and supply is a difficult arrangement, particularly for the party that's in the position of Fianna Fáil. You know, like, we are supporting a government, but at the same time, we're trying to oppose what they stand for. Now, my own view is, the problem with the confidence and supply agreement that we entered into is we shouldn't have extended it. It went on too long. But when you look at it, like a year after it or a year and a half after it, Fianna Fáil was doing very well in the polls under confidence and supply. So I wouldn't like people to think that confidence and supply should be archived and never revisited in Irish political culture. But unquestionably, a lot of people in Fianna Fáil were wondering, are we an opposition party or are we a government party? And like, had this been a Fianna Fáil minister, they would have been out the door immediately, you know? So, like, there was a, we were an opposition party. It wasn't tenable after what had gone on before for us now to say, okay, listen, we'll see what the Tánaiste has to say or see what she, what response she gives on the Dáil. Like, one of the things I've ever been very clear about, like, I was asked to go on the 6-1 news. I was going to go on it, but I wasn't going to go on if we were going to be wishy-washy about it, or if we're going to be sitting on the fence about, oh, well, we'll have to look at it. It's a very serious matter. I wasn't going to do that. So, like, the decision was made, discussion, me, all the advisors, that we couldn't continue to state that we had.
And did your insistence on having a firm answer on 6-1 force the hand, or was the decision already taken?
Listen, I don't think it was anyone in Fianna Fáil thought it would have been possible for us.
Been possible to, say, delay articulating your point of view over the weekend or something like that, for you to kind of
maybe
go,
so, you know. And you know, but I like, it was clear, I would have thought going on to the 6-1 that we had to have a definitive position. Fianna Fáil had to have a definitive position on this huge issue.
And were you in any way, was there any hesitation given the fact that Sinn Féin had in a way made the running, that they had sort of signalled about tabling a motion of confidence first?
No, like that happens. Like all the time there's threats from opposition parties to table motions and no confidence. I suppose it's different if you're a confidence and supply and you're the opposition party in a confidence and supply. Like, you determine whether or not a minister is going to survive or not. Yeah. So it's a big responsibility. So it's easier for other opposition parties to say, oh, we're putting down a motion, no confidence, because the likelihood is they won't succeed. Mm. Confidence is applied, though. If you say you're going to, if you have no confidence, it has real potential nuclear consequence. And it nearly did. We nearly ended up in a general election. But like, if I was there today and, like, you know, I had a good relationship with Frances Fitzgerald, she was unfortunate that she found herself on the wrong side of the Maurice McCabe narrative at this particular time when she wasn't even Minister for Justice. But there was no political alternative for Fianna Fáil.
One of the controversial aspects of this thing was it happened, it was an incident in the Dáil Bar that when you were on the 6-1 news, a group of your colleagues were heard kind of cheering when you made that expression of voting no confidence in Frances Fitzgerald. Was that helpful, or were you surprised that got the reaction that it did?
Obviously, I didn't, you know, the one person who definitely wasn't there, it was me. I was on the news at the time. I think it may have been overplayed that, like, I spoke to people afterwards. I think it was maybe one person or something like that. But can I say this to you? Like, confidence and supply, as well as being sensitive and difficult for the opposition party, it's also difficult for the government party. Because in effect, they're being, the future of one of their ministers can be controlled by an opposition party.
But was it not, just speaking candidly, I suppose, was it not just a great opportunity to give your long-hated rivals a bloodied nose?
I didn't feel it like that.
Okay.
I didn't feel it like that at all, you know?
But you might.
And like, I wouldn't have done that. Like, there's people, you know, there's personal issues here. There's people's reputations at stake, people's careers at stake. I wouldn't do that just for the sake of giving Fine Gael a bloody nose.
Yeah.
And in fairness, if you look at the performance of Fianna Fáil during the confidence and supply prior to that, on the whole issue of Maurice McCabe and Garda whistleblowers, like, we had been, we had opportunities to deliver a bloody nose to Fine Gael and we didn't.
Yeah.
But like, there comes a time when there's only so much stuff you can take on board without responding. And I think the response from Fianna Fáil was correct at the time.
Given your outing on 6-1, which obviously led the news, certainly the news agenda in the papers the following morning, but what we were getting very quickly from Fine Gael was a reluctance on the part of Leo Varadkar to consider sacking Frances Fitzgerald, which kind of upped the ante considerably. And that day we had Pascal Donoghue coming out and essentially rounding on the locker room, the Fianna Fáil locker room, as he described it. We'll take a quick listen, we have a clip.
For Fianna Fáil to make the charge today that Frances Fitzgerald or this government has been complicit in trying to undermine or challenge the work of brave people like Maurice McCabe shows the level to which they are now sinking to advance their own political agenda. And if I hear another reference to the Fianna Fáil locker room at a time in which our country is facing the kind of challenges that it is, It will only show again what is the motivations that are at play here.
That was the Friday, Jim, and we know that it kicked off a series of meetings between Micheál Martin and Leo Varadkar that weekend in order to try and avert a general election. Were you involved in those discussions that weekend?
No, I wasn't.
And were you aware of any sort of preconditions being put down on those talks as to what was on the table or what was not on the table?
No, but obviously it was a very dangerous political time for government, for opposition. Like, I suppose, just listening back to Pascal Donohue there, I suppose what it was in many respects, it was a culmination of frustration as well with confidence.
Yeah, because like, he was very animated. I saw the video.
Very angry, and yeah. Fianna Fáil was similarly angry. I suppose confidence in supply has an impact on government and opposition. Mm. And I suppose, you know, things had worked out relatively well. This was when the pot boiled over. Mm. And, you know, each party has their own constituencies. We also have our own reputations to protect. Like, I hadn't heard the term the Fianna Fáil locker room before you just played it there. I don't recall even hearing that. But it certainly wasn't like that. And I suppose, listen, I'm biased talking about this, but I would have thought if you look back on this and the history of Fianna Fáil's approach to the Maurice McCabe issue from 2016 on to, or say 2014 on to 2017, we behaved fairly responsibly. Mm. Very responsibly. Yeah. And it comes a stage where, listen, there had to be accountability for this. Yeah. And it wasn't just me saying it. Yeah. Look at what the media were saying at the time. And I know the media sometimes were caught up with it too. But there was a general perception that if the Department of Justice and the minister had been informed in May 2015 that there were efforts being made to discredit Maurice McCabe by the Garda Commissioner, she should have done something about that.
Yeah. That weekend, we heard there were discussions around reforms of the Department of Justice, splitting it up into Justice and Home Affairs as part of the agreement. But ultimately, it came down to the political scalp of Francis Fitzgerald. Micheál Martin is a notoriously cautious individual. I would have thought he probably needed a bit of stealing from people like yourself to make sure that demand stayed on the table. Or was he kind of resolute in his own head that
Well, I think he was resolute. Like, I suppose, being frank, having gone on the 6-1 news and communicated what was the party position, there was no way we were going to back out of that. Yeah. I remember we had you're right, though. Like, immediately after that appearance on the 6-1 news, in the couple of days afterwards, there was a change in attitude from Fine Gael. It was sort of, well, actually, we're just going to dig our heels in.
Yeah.
And go on, vote for a general election on what would have been something like the 20th of December.
December, yeah.
And I suppose, in fairness as well, a lot of people in my party who would have been very supportive of this attitude of standing up for ourselves and our reputation, when they've realised that there's a prospect of an election coming in December, you know, that was a concern for them as well.
Did you get any sense from, the people who may or may not have been cheering in the Dáil Bar on the Thursday, giving you maybe stick on the Saturday, saying actually
no one gave me stick, but I suppose in politics you need to be aware of the consequences of the decisions you make.
Yeah.
And like, I was fairly clear when I was going on the 6-1 news, because I think it was Sharon Viola, and said to me, you know, this could result in a general election. Mm. I said, yeah, it could.
Yeah.
You know, so like we had set out our position very clearly, and Fine Gael then adopted the policy of, we're going to defend Frances. We don't think she should have to resign. But then on the Monday, further documents came out.
6 o'clock on that Monday.
Yeah. Documents came out from the Department of Justice. And I suppose those documents confirmed the narrative that we were expressing, which was that there was an awareness within the Department of Justice and from the Minister of the strategy being used against,
and also as well,
Maurice
that there were a number of documents that had not yet been transferred over to the Disclosure Tribunal as well. So there was a criticism of
the Department for not complying with a request for discovery from the Disclosures Tribunal.
Yeah.
And then Frances, I think, did resign.
The following day, she sat through 40 minutes of cabinet, all seeing relatively normal, and then she apparently hands her resignation to her stunned colleagues to a certain degree. But by which the writing was on the wall, I think many of her cabinet colleagues had said that she kind of had to go. But we have, our final clip is just a clip of Leo Varadkar informing the Dáil of Frances Fitzgerald's resignation. Let's take a look.
This morning, Frances Fitzgerald came to me to offer her resignation as Tánaiste and Minister for Business, Enterprise and Innovation. She is doing so to avoid an unnecessary and early general election that could have left the country without a functioning government and Oireachtas for several months at a crucial time for Ireland. The work of the government and parliament must not be interrupted during this important period. So it is with deep regret that I've accepted her resignation. I continue to believe that the Tánaiste acted throughout in a way that was appropriate, but these are matters that will now be investigated and adjudicated on by a tribunal.
There is
Deputy Fitzgerald is a well-liked member of this House and has many achievements as a minister to her credit. And I believe, however, that she took the right decision today.
We didn't have to end up in the situation that we're in today. Had questions been answered properly and in full, I certainly would not have had to come into the House on two occasions and correct what I had said. I think had all of the information, the questions been answered, the emails been found and put into the public domain 7 or 10 days ago, I don't think it would be necessary for the Taoiseach to tender her resignation this morning.
We agreed on Friday when we met for the first time that both of us did not want a general election. And I think both of us worked genuinely to avoid that reality from occurring, notwithstanding very different positions that we had on this particular issue.
I just want to add to that by acknowledging the fact that that Deputy Martin, as leader of Fianna Fáil and the Fianna Fáil Party, engaged in good faith with me and the government over the weekend in our efforts to avert an unnecessary general election.
Jim, as we heard there from Leo Varadkar, he insisted that essentially a good woman was leaving office without getting a full hearing. Do you accept that?
It was not a pleasant time politically, to be honest with you. I got absolutely no, you talk about, oh, getting a scalp. I got no pleasure out of it whatsoever. And I actually don't think people in Fianna Fáil did either. Like, Fianna Fáil ministers have had to resign. Mm. It has consequences for the individuals, for their families. It's a very upsetting time. You're at the focus of national attention. And like, as I said to you, Frances Fitzgerald is a decent woman. And, you know, if she was here, she'd refer to the tribunal report of Mr. Justice Charlton, which recorded that she resigned selflessly in the national interest to avoid an election. And that's true. And
do you accept the Fine Gael spin that she was fully vindicated by Peter Charlton?
Listen, I'm not. There's a difference between the political realm and the legal realm, as in, say, a tribunal of inquiry. Like, I went back and had a look at the Irish Times editorial. Sorry, I didn't get a chance to look at the Examiner one. The Irish Times editorial. Yeah, the day after. Okay? And, like, I just thought it made a lot of sense. And it says, not unreasonably, Frances Fitzgerald, like Alan Shatter, pleaded for due process. But politics has its own logic and its own momentum. Fitzgerald's departure had become a political imperative. Mm. That was just the reality of it. But listen, the tribunal heard what she had to say and heard the evidence of all others, and it reached a conclusion that it accepted her view that she didn't wish to intervene in the O'Higgins proceedings, and it accepted her view that it was a matter for the commissioner as to how the commissioner approached the O'Higgins commission. Mm-hmm. Listen, Frances went on, she was elected MEP for Dublin. Her career is still going very well, but you know, it was a difficult time. But if you're asking me here now, oh, in light of the tribunal report, do you regret the policy adopted by Fianna Fáil? I don't. It was a political imperative at the time. And politics is a tough, hard business. And sometimes we don't take into account the sensitivities of other persons within the political realm and indeed outside it. But there's also times where you're just forced to make a decision, no matter what the consequences are.
For you, what were the long-term consequences of that episode, either for your own party or for you personally?
Well, I suppose you can do a counterfactual history on it. Like, we could have had an election in December. What would have been the result of that election? I don't know. I think Fianna Fáil probably would have done better than what we did in 2020.
Yeah,
I would have thought so. That's, I suppose, the only thing I know. I suspect Sinn Féin wouldn't have done as well. But listen, I get on well with most people in Dáil Éireann, you know. I didn't have a reputation of calling for people to resign.
Mm.
And when I did, like, I remember one of the programmes, Ivan Yates was on the air at the time. And he said, sure, there's no way that Jim O'Callaghan's going to call on anyone to resign. So he just doesn't do that, you know?
Yeah.
And like the criticism from her, Brendan Howlin, saying something in a piece of social media, saying, oh, that's Jim O'Callaghan acting as a lawyer, pretending to be a politician, you know? So it was, I didn't derive any pleasure from it. And obviously, listen, it affected my relationship with Frances Fitzgerald. Mm. I'm sure it affected Micheál's relationship with Frances as well.
Did it affect your relationship with Micheál Martin? Because you were very close with him at that stage, and one could maybe clearly say you're maybe not as close as you were at that point.
Well, I suppose that issue was the dominant issue at the time. So justice was on his desk more than housing, more than anything else at that particular time. Listen, he had a difficult task as well, and I suppose he played an important role on the Maurice McCabe narrative, having handed the dossier to Enda Kenny in 2014. But I suppose the thing that stands out for me, having got in there in 2016, that there was an advantage nearly in coming in 2016, because I had no
baggage
or involvement with what happened before then. And all the issues arose about what happened before May 2016. But no, I don't think it affected my relationship with Micheál.
How stands your relationship with him now? Because you decided not to take up an offer of a junior ministry in 2020. Do you regret that decision?
No, I don't. No, listen, we've gone over that. I've no difficulty doing another podcast with you.
I know, but it'd be remiss of me not to ask you while you were here.
No, I don't. I suppose we worked very closely on the justice issue. And listen, I said it to him. I said it before publicly. I think he should have got the justice portfolio for Fianna Fáil. If you look at the fact that Fine Gael have foreign affairs and justice, they're two very important portfolios, particularly in terms of Northern Ireland and issues like that. And I just thought we should have got the justice portfolio. But listen, that's water under the bridge now.
Jim, it was made known to me last year that a number of your colleagues approached you, yourself and your ally, John Lahart, with a motion of no confidence. They had 8 signatures and you and Lahart basically said, no, we're not going to do it, thereby stymieing the attempt to take Micheál out in the wake of the Dublin Bay South by-election. Do you have any comment on that?
I thought this was a podcast on the resignation of Francis Fitzgerald.
It is, but yourself, you throw in a postscript to these things.
Listen, every Sunday there's a story in the newspapers about, heaves and Fianna Fáil, changes of leadership, blah, blah, blah. The answer is no.
Okay.
I wasn't going to sign. Like that time, you talk about it, there was a by-election going on in Dublin Bay South. Listen, there are issues for Fianna Fáil. I listened to your podcast with Billy Kelleher. Like there are issues for Fianna Fáil. And my own view is they extend beyond one individual. Like if you look at Fianna Fáil as a centre-ground national party, our principles and what we stand for, it reflects the principles and what the Irish people stand for. And I suppose what's concerning is that we don't seem to be reflecting that by getting the support of the Irish people. So there's an issue there for all of us in Fianna Fáil, not just for Micheál Martin. Why is it that the party that has the values of so many Irish people as a centre-ground party, we don't want extremism in this country.
Yeah.
Why is it that as a centre-ground national party, we're not getting greater support from the Irish public? And that's an issue that I have to answer, and others as well.
And do you still harbour leadership ambitions because you are seen as the heir apparent, or have been seen as the heir apparent by so many?
Sure, listen, this is... I said before as well, and I didn't think it was going to turn into an ongoing saga. Like, I would have thought most members of Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party, members of Dáil Éireann, would be honoured to lead Fianna Fáil, I was asked the question, would I like to lead Fianna Fáil? Of course I would. It's a huge privilege, irrespective of whatever happens after that. It's a fantastic centre-ground national party. It's played a huge role in the development of this country. And I think it's important for the sake of the country that Fianna Fáil is preserved and continues and grows stronger.
If an opportunity was to make itself available, come a reshuffle in December, are you there? Would you be turning Micheál Martin down again, or would you be making yourself available?
He didn't offer me a job in cabinet. And you heard what I had to say about,
We should have got a lesser role.
Yeah, it was not even that. There were more consequences. There's more to all this than Okay.
Well, we might do another podcast on that one someday. But my thanks to Jim O'Callaghan for being our guest today. The podcast was produced by Paul Hofford and myself, Danny McConnell. On sound and editing is JJ Vernon. Thank you very much to all our listeners for listening to this episode and indeed this series of Let Me Tell You. We'll be back sometime in the new year.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you very much for listening. Bye-bye for now.